Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. A pair of Democratic state lawmakers have introduced joint resolutions for the 2018 legislative session that propose an amendment to the Florida Constitution to expand Medicaid coverage. The proposals from Representative Lori Berman of Lantana and Senator Annette Tadeo of Miami would have to be approved by at least 60% of voters in a ballot referendum in a general election. The move aims to expand access to health care coverage to the roughly 800,000 Floridians who currently fall into the coverage gap. That means they earn too little to qualify for a subsidy on plans offered through the federal health insurance marketplace, but earn too much to be considered eligible for Medicaid. The Republican-dominated state legislature has resisted efforts to expand eligibility requirements for Medicaid since the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010. Today, we hear from patient advocates and health policy experts about what an expansion of Medicaid in Florida could mean. Plus, families that depend on the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, for health coverage are facing growing uncertainty about their future access to care amid Congress's continued inaction on passing a funding reauthorization bill. Congress initially missed that deadline at the end of September. Now CHIP programs in states across the country, including Florida, could soon run out of money. CHIP programs across the country provide access to care for some 9 million low-income children and 370,000 pregnant women annually, and Florida has the fourth largest CHIP program in the nation. Today, we're also exploring how officials are preparing for what could be an unprecedented lapse in federal funding for CHIP programs. Joining me now is Adam Searing. He's an associate professor of the practice at the Georgetown University McCourt School of Public Policy's Center for Children and Families, where he focuses on Medicaid and other health coverage programs. Searing is a licensed attorney with degrees in both law and public health. He was named a Florida Advocate of the Year in 2012 by the national consumer group Families USA. That same year, Searing also was recognized as a champion of change in health care by the White House. Adam Searing, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Very nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Scott Darius. He's executive director of the patient advocacy organization Florida Voices for Health, which is a consortium of community groups, individuals, and businesses here in Florida. Thanks for your time this afternoon as well.
Thanks for having me. Great to be on.
And Representative Berman and Senator Tadeo were unavailable to join today's live discussion, but I did catch up with them late last week to talk about their Medicaid expansion proposal. Let's begin by listening to a bit of that conversation. Representative Berman, you've been in the State House since 2011, and Senator Tadeo, you're certainly no stranger to public office here in Florida. What can you tell me about past legislative efforts to expand Medicaid coverage here in Florida? Can you help us put that in a little bit of a recent historical context?
Sure. The closest we came to expanding Medicaid was during the 2013 session when the Senate, with the governor's approval, passed a version of Medicaid expansion, and it would have made most people in that coverage gap eligible. However, the House refused to pass the bill, and it was kind of infamous because our present Speaker of the House, he used a quote that was pretty famous, and he said he won't dance. And he's not going to be part of this. So that was why we haven't had it. And now he's the speaker, and so it continues to not be even discussed, basically, in the state of Florida because of that.
So did you decide going about it this way might be best, just to, if there's a way you can put this before the voters themselves? Do you feel like there just maybe isn't the political will with the current makeup of the legislature to make a move like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we always hear about how important it is to let the voters decide. So that was a big part of the decision in our filing this legislation. But also, we had seen that the state of Maine just passed it in November. They put it on their ballot, and they allowed their voters to do it. So we decided this would be a great time. The timing was right to allow the Florida voters to make the decision.
This is Annette, Senator Tadeo. I just wanted to add to what Representative Berman said, and I think both of us, she's been in Tallahassee serving for quite a while, so she's certainly aware of how difficult a task this will be, and so am I, because they have certainly not let this come forward, let this move in any way. But I think, to allow the voters to decide is a good way for the voters to have a say, because at a time when there's a lot of uncertainty with regards to health care at the federal level, I think a lot of people would like to see that, you know, over 800,000 additional Floridians would have health care. And it is a political year, an election year, and I do remember when I ran with Charlie as his running mate for lieutenant governor, that the current governor, Rick Scott, he was running for re-election, and he changed his mind on Medicaid expansion because obviously the voters, and he could see it in the polling, that the voters were very much in favor of expanding it. But once he got elected, he changed his mind again, back the other way around. So you never know what could happen in an election year when the voters are obviously paying a little more attention. And sometimes these politicians, it takes an election for them to actually move, which is really sad. They should do it for the right reason.
And Representative Berman, your proposal, the language specifically would expand eligibility to adults under age 65 with income equal to or below 138% of the federal poverty level. Can you put that in perspective a little bit for us in regards to what that could mean in terms of...
Sure. It's... $16,600 a year for a single adult and about $22,000 for a family of two people. So we're not talking about people who are making very much money, and that's the point of fact of why they're not able to purchase insurance coverage, because they don't make enough money. You know, they make enough hope for them to barely get by and not be able to afford insurance coverage.
I feel, you know, she's absolutely right, and I actually feel that we're in a way sending a very bad message to these hardworking people who are barely making ends meet. And what we're saying is, you know, you're being punished for working and making very little. And Medicaid expansion was done specifically to, you know, target these individuals who are working and doing the best they can, but they can barely meet their needs. Imagine $11,000 a year, certainly in South Florida. That won't go very far and doesn't leave you enough for health care. And guess what? When they all go to the hospital and don't get treated and then go when it's really, really bad, the rest of us are left paying for that. So at the end of the day, it is not in the best interest. And this is money we send up to Washington. It is unbelievable to me that we are not, you know, getting that money back in the state of Florida, investing it, which will create jobs for small businesses and a lot of opportunities in the healthcare industry as well.
Well, Senator Tadeo, I'm glad you brought up the issue of cost, because one of the primary arguments we hear from opponents to expanding Medicaid here in Florida is that it would be cost prohibitive. We've heard lawmakers say in years past, and this includes former House Speaker Steve Crisafulli, that Medicaid funding amounts to about a third of the state's overall budget. And I'm wondering if you find arguments like that maybe a little bit disingenuous, considering that something like close to 60% of the money that goes toward providing care for Florida Medicaid enrollees actually comes from the federal government.
Well, exactly. I mean, it is money that we're leaving at the table. There's actually a study recently done that was published by the New York Times, you know, that specifically talks about the states that have made out because of, you know, states like ours that are passing up on the funding for Medicaid expansion. So I think it's actually the opposite. It's costing us money to not cover these individuals. It is costing the economy because they don't, you know, they're not at liberty. They're always worried about, you know, how are they going to pay the bills, and if they get sick, what happens? So I think, you know, overall, and that's why Maine passed it, and the states that have expanded Medicaid, we have actually seen that the insurance rates have gone down for people. So that would actually also help regular Floridians. So there's a lot of reasons why to expand it. And I think it's, you know, that argument that you just gave us is being penny wise, pound foolish.
You know, in terms of actual dollars, there's been information that the state of Florida is actually passing up $6 billion a year because of our failure to expand Medicaid. And that's a significant amount of money that could really have a strong impact on our economy, not to mention the fact that we have 800,000 people who don't have health insurance coverage because of it. So those two items alone certainly justify having Medicaid expansion in the state of Florida.
And just to be clear, that's $6 billion with a B?
Correct.
Okay, okay. Just wanted to make sure that was clear there. Yeah. And on top of that, and I think you both touched on this a little bit, when you have these folks who don't really have access to care, aren't eligible for Medicaid, and as you noticed, you know, with incomes that low, don't really have any money left over for things like healthcare almost becomes a luxury, those folks end up in emergency rooms. And by that point, usually their problems are more severe, they're more costly to deal with, and they're seeking care in literally the most expensive place possible, an emergency room. And if they can't pay for it, we have federal EMTALA laws passed during the Reagan administration, so ERs don't turn people away. And one way or another, the taxpayers pay for their care.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. I mean, and you know, think about it. These people can't get any preventative care. And without preventative care, that's why they end up in the hospital. So it is certainly, I think, as Senator Tadeo said, penny wise and pound foolish.
I was thinking about how, you know, there were other states who were like Florida in the sense that their legislatures were not willing to expand Medicaid with federal money under the Affordable Care Act, but they didn't have this big coverage gap because their Medicaid programs were already, for lack of a better term, a little more generous than Florida's. And I was wondering, Representative Berman, if that was something you looked into, what other states' Medicaid programs do cover when you came up with this, you know, 138% of the federal poverty level formula.
This is pretty much the formula that's been done in other states, the 138. But I think that what you need to realize is Florida is the third largest state in the country. And so we have one of the largest populations of people who don't have health insurance because we haven't expanded Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And that's really why we have 800,000 people right now. And we're also one of the states where we have a lot of people who live on minimum wage. A lot of our wage earners are paid very low. So I think those combinations are what's caused Florida to be in the position we're in right now with so many uninsured.
I'm from Miami-Dade. I represent Miami-Dade. And in Miami-Dade and Broward, you know, those two counties alone, there would be close to 200,000 people that would be covered if we expand Medicaid. That, you know, those are uninsured right now and are expected to qualify. That's 22% of the entire state. I mean, that to me is just appalling.
Well, another way that we are in a unique situation right now is because we have the Constitution Revision Commission literally deciding what ballot amendments to proposals to put to voters. Is there any possibility that the CRC might consider taking up something like this?
I haven't heard anything at this point. I know they are looking at something like 100 proposals, but I have not heard that this was one of their proposals.
We have to remember that those are, you know, appointed, but those in power, which right now are, you know, unfortunately, you know, the governor and others that are, it's very clear the kind of things they're proposing, and they're not necessarily in the best interest of the citizens, like Medicaid expansion would be.
Just changing gears a little bit, we know everyone's closely watching Congress right now because we haven't seen a reauthorization funding bill for the Children's Health Insurance Program. Mm-hmm. I've spoken with health policy experts who have been studying this program since its inception in 1997, and they tell me that the situation we're in now is unprecedented. Congress has never before allowed funding reauthorization for needy children and pregnant women to lapse like this. Do we have any idea when Florida KidCare, you know, which administers CHIP here in Florida, might run out of money? Or even if that's something we don't know, have you considered, is there anything that the legislature might be able to do to help make sure that folks who rely on that coverage don't see it lapse if Congress doesn't act?
Sure. We're supposed to have enough funds and right now from the federal allotment to get us through the end of January 2018. There are reserves available, and if Congress doesn't fund CHIP, we'll likely have to look into the reserves. But I'm really disappointed, and it is unprecedented, and I can't believe we are in this position where KidCare would not be funded at this point. So I'm hopeful that Congress steps up and meets its obligation to help these children and pregnant women.
It's unfathomable that we're even discussing this. I can't believe that anybody, you know, would put anything above taking care of children, and that just makes zero sense to me. And I hope the pressure, and hopefully these new elections that are happening will get them to wake up, that people don't like what's happening.
All right. Well, we'll, of course, be closely watching the progress of your proposed joint resolutions in your respective chambers. Senator Annette Tadeo and State Representative Lori Berman, it's been so great to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And those were the Democratic state lawmakers who are proposing measures to potentially expand Medicaid in Florida. And we're going to expand on that conversation now with Adam Searing with the Georgetown University McCourt School of Public Policy's Center for Children and Families, along with Executive Director of Florida Voices for Health, Scott Darius. Listeners can join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Adam Searing, I know that you and your colleagues at Georgetown's Health Policy Institute really have your fingers on the pulse of what's happening in Congress relative to CHIP funding. Are there any updates that you can give us? What's happening now? Do you see anything potentially coming down the pike that could help out programs in states like Florida that are really on the verge of running out of money?
Well, we're hopeful, but things aren't looking the greatest right now. Congress is so focused on this tax bill and the other year-end issues that issues that really matter to people and families like the Children's Health Insurance Program have trouble breaking through, and that's a shame because really, there's agreement in both the Senate and the House and among Democrats and Republicans that the CHIP programs to be funded. The disagreement and what's holding things up is Republicans in the House would like to cut some programs like public health, immunizations and heart disease prevention, and they'd like to use that money to fund CHIP, and that's not a very popular option.
And what do you think accounts for this missed September 30th deadline and the continued lack of action here? You talked about the tax cut bill a couple months ago. It was put on the back burner because of the Graham Cassidy bill. Does there just always seem to be something that's taking precedence?
Yeah, it's puzzling. I mean, CHIP is unusual and then it has really strong bipartisan support. It also, the bills extending CHIP passed both the House and the Senate. The disagreement was really over, how they were going to pay for the cost of extending the health insurance program for kids. And I really think what happened was it's less ideological than the Republicans got focused on this tax cut bill and then this idea they were going to repeal the Affordable Care Act and went ahead and moved with those. And it's puzzling because, of course, the tax cut bill, every independent analysis is saying it's adding, either hundreds of millions or over $1 trillion to the deficit. Yet with the CHIP bill, they're arguing over a few billion dollars in spending. Where's that going to come from? Do we need to cut vaccine programs? So I hope they can, get it together. It's something that everyone agrees should be a good thing, which is kids' health insurance.
Right. Are you aware of any states at this point who have run out of money? And if so, are there state legislatures stepping up to sort of fill that funding gap so that folks don't see lapses in access to care?
There have not been any states that have run out yet. There are several states that have started to send letters and notices to families saying, prepare for ending coverage if Congress doesn't get its act together.
And, perhaps the biggest concern has to do with the fact that for decades, the rate of uninsured children in the U.S. has been on the decline, thanks in large part to the CHIP program. Are you worried that continued inaction by Congress on funding CHIP could reverse that trend?
Absolutely. We're nationally over 95% of kids have health coverage in our country. It's one of our biggest success stories, and that's due to the CHIP program and, frankly, the Medicaid program. You combine those two, and we have almost every kid in this country covered, and that's something we should really be proud of. We shouldn't be going backwards, and I think not funding CHIP is a way to go backwards very quickly.
And Scott Darius, I was hoping you could tell us first just a bit about Florida Voices for Health and whether the organization takes a stand on these proposed Medicaid expansions that we were just discussing earlier.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me. Florida Voices for Health
We're a statewide consumer advocacy organization. We really focus on educating our communities on issues related to healthcare, different policies that are happening. So often we see that there's such a disconnect between what's happening in legislatures or in Congress and what the folks on the ground who have to deal with the consequences of these policies. There's such a disconnect between what's understood. We as a coalition, along with some of our partners around the state, like Dr. Becca or Catalyst Miami, SEIU, we really work to get into our communities, educate folks, and then mobilize them to be a part of the conversation, to share their experiences and their stories. And hopefully we can all, that process helps us all get to a better healthcare system. When it comes to Medicaid expansion, myself and a lot of our partners, we fully stand behind the proposal to expand eligibility. So much of what we see here in the state of Florida, we have so many hardworking individuals, and like Senator Tadeo and Representative Berman mentioned, so many of them who are the backbone of Florida's tourist economy, just end up working for hourly wages, don't really make enough to pay for health insurance as is. And a lot of folks, the folks who are lucky enough to make it under our restrictive standards, get the benefit of that security of coverage. But there's so many Floridians, almost over 800,000, who don't have that. And that's it's a difficult reality to live in, day out.
What do you think the bigger battle is going to be, actually getting these joint resolutions through the legislative process and on the ballot, or getting at least 60% of Floridians to support it when they go out to vote?
Well, we've long maintained there was a Close the Gap coalition in the state of Florida for the last couple of years, and we've long maintained, and we've seen it play out in polling, how popular we think Medicaid expansion, the idea of it, is here in the state of Florida. When we have a chance to explain it to folks and really explain how it gives the working Floridian a hand up, there really is a groundswell of support for that kind of change. So I think the difficulty for us is getting our lawmakers to give that question, to put that question to the people. Over the last couple of years, through different legislative sessions, it's been a lot of a he said battle, right? He said, she said battle,
right,
where we say there's overwhelming support. They reply that there are plenty of Floridians who don't want it to happen. And I think this actually gives us an opportunity to settle that question. This takes it out of their hands if they don't want to play politics with it, and just leaves it directly to the people of Florida whether or not this should be something we do for our own.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time for today's show, but thank you so much to Adam Searing and Scott Darius for speaking with us today, and hopefully we can check back in with you in the future.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Our show today was produced by Mike Canary, Rachel Iacovone, Julie Glenn, and myself. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.